following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
I'd say, here it is. In broad daylight, it finally comes out. It finally, the rats and cockroaches in the swamp come out. And what you're seeing here, ladies and gentlemen, is the unholy alliance of all time. Open borders put forth by both parties, which we call the Uni Party, Republicans and Democrats, before President Trump. This is a one-party system for open borders. Democrats will fight to the death for open borders because they want cheap votes. They want to change the makeup of the American voter by letting illegals in, putting them on a government benefit, turning them into lifelong, permanent Democratic voters. Democrats want open borders for cheap votes. That's why they don't want a fence. That's why they don't want a wall. That's why they don't want a barrier. Why? Because they're afraid it's going to work. And their Republican complicit compatriots, driven by Wall Street, gangster, bankster, Goldman Sachs, bonus first, America last donors who don't give a rat's tail about this country, their workers, wages, or anything else. They care about one thing. Cheap labor. They want immigrants to bum rush the country so they can flood the workforce, driving down wages to get cheap labor to drive profits for the companies they represent on the stock market. So instead of getting a $2 million bonus, they can get a $5 million. That has been the unholy alliance that has been going on in the country for 40 years. And this president, President Donald J. Trump, is trying to break it over the head and expose it for what it is, and he's going to do that tonight in his address. The president is going to make his big speech tonight from the Oval Office. This is something that many of us on our show, many of our listeners, has encouraged the president to do. Get in front of the American people. No podium, no big microphones there, no standing up. Sit at your desk and tell the American people what we're fighting, what we're up against, what we're doing. Tell them. Talk to them. Have a conversation. And that is what is going down tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. It is the president's number one first address to the American people from the Oval Office, where he can have a conversation with them. And it doesn't matter what he says. CNN and the New York Slimes and the Washington Compost and everybody else who is part of the fake news media, never Trumper contingent, they're going to blast whatever he says. He's got the data. He's got the numbers. He's going to have a conversation. And this is going to be the president's, I believe, finest moment leading up to his State of the Union address, which is going to be boycotted and booed and all that. But you can't do that from the Oval Office. There's no audience. There's no booing. There's no panning the crowd to see somebody sitting on their hands and Nancy Pelosi's sour puss behind the podium. None of that. None of that. No questions from fake news reporters like Caitlin Collins. None of that. No Jim Acosta. None of the fake newsers. Just the president having a conversation with the American people who elected him president as to what he's attempting to do. We had a on-the-record briefing yesterday. President Trump, Vice President Pence was there, Secretary Nielsen, the acting head of the OMB, the head of the Border Patrol. Also, Jared Kushner was there. He got an opportunity to ask a question directly to the president about the asylum status. But, you know, I just want to dispel all these rumors out there, the fake news about despair in the White House and chaos and dark clouds over. Look, we were there an hour, And the president's entire senior staff was there, including Sarah Sanders and many other people, Bill Shine, Higley, who was coming on here in a moment, all that good stuff. But as far as chaos, I mean, it's just false. I mean, everybody's in a great mood, the president in a great mood, and so is the staff. Hogan was there. He's going to be joining us here in a moment. So all this nonsense about chaos and all this stuff, it is just fake news. I mean, you can't feign this for an hour. The president, the vice president has a great relationship. So it was a great hour that we had, very informative. But the bottom line is you got two things going on. You have a crisis at the border and the Democrats simply not willing to negotiate. Joining us now to flush all this out and give us the facts and no fake news here, Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley, backed by popular demand. Hogan, thanks for being with us, man.
Facts the powers that be, including the president of the United States. And now the American people are going to hear the entire scenario, hopefully tonight.
Well, listen, Hogan, I want to get to those facts, but you just heard my opening. All of this mantra we keep hearing from the fake news media about the chaos and despair in the White House and people are leaving and jumping ship and everybody's unhappy. Look, I was there an hour yesterday. You were in that room. I got to just be candid. I didn't sense any of that. I sensed the exact opposite. People were fired up. There was hope. There was enthusiasm. Why does this story keep coming out?
I'm not sure. I think that there are enough people around who still, because the narrative was built early on that there was chaos. And look, there's no doubt that I wasn't in the administration in the better part of the first year. I've only been here for about a year and a half now. But I heard things were tough around here, and I understand that. But any new administration is tough. But the narrative was kind of baked that this is a president or a staff that is chaotic, that can't get out of its own way, and those types of things are just not true. You saw it yesterday, and anyone who comes over here, I can't tell you how many family members or friends I run into in the hallways for either my own or other people. They're here visiting me or other people, and they'll say, everyone says it's so crazy here, but it's not. You guys are just walking around doing work. And I was like, yes, I'm well aware of that. It's a narrative that's false. It's something that the fake news media and so many others try to push out on the American people because they think it's kind of understandable and digestible that, oh, it's just chaotic and crazy. And they want people to think their government and their president is somehow making things worse when in actuality, as you well know and as your listeners, he's had record-setting accomplishments in record-setting time. He's done more for this country than most presidents do in their entire term. And he's in two terms. He's done it in 2 years. So
right.
they thought this was all going to come crashing down as soon as he became president, whether it was the economy or ISIS going to take over the Middle East or taxes, whatever, that our lives would be worse off. And lo and behold, he turns everything around and changes the narrative in that it's all better than it was before. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama, we now know, did nothing for the U.S. economy, did nothing for the American people in terms of their paychecks getting larger and jobs coming back. He did none of those things. This president did it. So the very person they wanted to be the savior of this country, Barack Obama, wasn't. So if they admit that Donald Trump is doing well and actually doing things positively for the American people, then it destroys the caricature of that they themselves created about Barack Obama, that he was somehow the best president in history, when in actuality he did nothing but harm this country for the most part.
You know, look, I tell you, Hogan, in yesterday's meeting, what was outlined, here's what I just want to share with our listeners, what the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security said, Secretary Nielsen. She said, Congress is simply not appropriating my department the funds I need to do my job. I thought that was one of the most riveting comments in that hour. And basically what you've got is a crisis at the border that the Democrats do not want to acknowledge in the face of all sorts of facts and data. They just want to ignore it like it doesn't exist. Secondly, they don't want to negotiate. As the vice president said yesterday, he said there was a meeting, you were at it, with senior Democratic staff on Sunday with Jared Kushner and Vice President Pence and yourself and others. And they met not with Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer. They met with their staff. and the president and vice president said in the meeting, you know, the first three things that first top three staffers said is, well, we'll negotiate with you after you open the government. And the vice president's position was, that's ridiculous, because all you're going to do is get a CR, and then on the 29th day, we're going to be having the same fight. Let's just get this done. Where do we go from here?
They've been pushing that narrative for the better part of a year, the Democrats, that we can just negotiate on DHS later. Listen to how that sounds on the face. Just say this out loud for a moment. They want to open the government by passing these six bills, but they don't want to fund at crisis levels, a crisis situation, the Department of Homeland Security. So now Democrats are saying, hey, we are beginning to recognize, at first, they didn't know the data, they didn't believe the data, and they didn't care about the data. Now they're starting to understand, wait a minute, this data isn't by political people, this is by career officials at DHS, ICE, and CBP, who are on the border putting their lives on the line every day. They're the ones compiling this data. They work for Democrats and Republicans. All they are civil servants out there trying to keep the peace for this nation. They're the ones giving us this data. So now we begin to understand it. But in the face of understanding it and believing that this is a crisis, they're saying, hey, but our solution is let's just kick the can down the road for another 30 days, maybe another 45 days, and fund status quo laws at status quo levels when there's a crisis situation. Now, that makes zero sense whatsoever. Any sane person who's looking at the data and understands that we've seen massive increases in family units coming to this country, massive increases in fake family units who say they're related, but they aren't. So they're part of child trafficking, human smuggling, that type of thing. Massive increases in the amount of unaccompanied children, 25% increase. We'll see 100, if things hold, we'll see 100,000 unaccompanied children come to this country in the first quarter. We didn't see that entire total all of last year. So the numbers are staggering because people are coming across the country. We even coming across the border into our country. You heard the statistic yesterday too. They confiscated enough fentanyl last year to kill every man, woman, and child in this country. 2,500 pounds they caught on the border. That would kill every person in this country with an overdose. Now, if that's not a crisis situation, I don't know what is. The amount of people coming up in these caravans, we now see an escalation in violence in them. 30% of women report being raped on the journey. 70% of men report being assaulted. And listen, we caught about a quarter of a million people in this country here illegally last year for doing three of the following categories of crimes: 100,000 assaults, 30,000 sex crimes, about 4,000 homicides, just to name a few. I mean, that's 4,000 people dead in this country that, quite frankly, those crimes are 100% preventable. And Democrats, it's in their court. All they have to do is vote on it, and they're holding up the American people hostage. I don't know if they're beholden to just their political base. I don't know if they're beholden to special interest groups. But regardless, the American people are being shortchanged here.
Well, and as the president said yesterday in the briefing, and we're with Hogan Gidley, he is the deputy press secretary, spokesperson for the president of the United States, President Trump, who everyone knows now, is addressing the nation from the Oval Office tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Do not want to miss that. One of the things the president said yesterday is that, look, the barrier, and he said, look, I can abandon wall. I don't need a concrete wall. It can be a barrier. It can be steel. That's fine. He said, if that's the sticking point, I'm willing to negotiate that. But he said that is simply a piece of the border security solutions that we need. We have to finish the barrier. We have to fix the laws that don't make any sense at all. We have to override the Flores settlement to allow families to remain together. One of the things he said is when an unaccompanied child and their parents or somebody that's with them comes over the border, the law says they can only be held for 20 days. Well, they can't be processed for 20 days. Then they're simply released into the United States. Some of them go back across the border, he said, and then get repurposed with another family. That's how absurd this is. And then he said, finally, he said only 2% of the people that are asking for asylum and get released actually come back to go through the paperwork. 2%. And he said 90% of the claims are false. So you got to change the law. Why do the Democrats resist that? That's just common sense, Hogan.
Well, not to mention, we actually included some things. We put forth a package that they were clamoring that we haven't told them what we wanted, which is not true. But we said, fine, we'll go ahead and send it out to the national media. We'll put it forward in your inboxes. We'll hand deliver it to Congress. And we did all of those things. And, of course, the steel slat barrier is 100% part of this package because, as we all know, statistical data shows walls work. Wherever you put them, whether it's Israel or here in the United States, in Yuma and Tucson and El Paso, San Diego, we've seen a 95% reduction on average of illegal crossings in those areas because walls work. That's why you have front doors on your house. That's why you have gated communities. It makes you safer. They're time-tested, proven methods of security. But in addition to that, we upped some of the dollar amounts we talked about for humanitarian needs based on some of the things the Democrats wanted. We said, okay, let's enhance some medical support and transportation. We also wanted a certain amount of money for detention and ICE beds. We upped that as well. In addition, the technology and counter-narcotics. Right now, we don't screen all the vehicles that come through this country. We've now purchased, or in this package, it purchases equipment that allows us to screen every single vehicle that comes into this country. And that's great. Those are our ports of entry. But it goes back to the overall concept, which is 72% of the people who come into this country illegally come in between ports of entry, which means with no barrier, it'll just take them away from ports of entry right out into the desert, and they'll just walk across the border that way. I mean, it's just so commonsensical, as you said, and the American people know this. Any sane, rational person understands that walls work. Call it a barrier, call it a fence. The president was even clear, and even told the Democrats, help me design it. I don't care what it looks like. It just needs to be effective. And now we're talking about steel, which is even better because we can use U.S. steel to build it. So it creates even more jobs. I mean, the plan is just so brilliant on its face, and it actually works. It's not just a lot of lip service. So, again, these same Democrats who oppose it now, the Chuck Schumers, the Hillary Clintons, the Barack Obamas, the Bill Clintons, all those folks voted for a barrier fencing in 2006 and 2013. They all did that. But now that Donald Trump's trying to do it, somehow that changes the calculus. They need to understand the American people want this. They deserve this. They want to be like these congressmen are, and it's time to come to the table and negotiate to get this deal done.
60,000 unaccompanied children came across the border in fiscal year 2018. That's an increase of 25%. 161,000 family units came across the border in fiscal 2018. That's an increase of 50%. We've got drugs. We've got terrorists. We've got fentanyl. We've got heroin. Do you know that? What was it? I heard Kellyanne said in the meeting yesterday, Kellyanne Conway Hogan, she said 92% of all heroin that comes into the United States comes across the southern border. 92%. So we have a crisis, and nobody wants to do anything about it.
That heroin accounts for 300 deaths per week in this country. Not per month, not per year, per week in this country. I mean, this is an absolute crisis. It's a national security crisis, first and foremost, with the terrorism on the border, with the criminals, the 17,000 convicted criminals trying to get into this country that already had a criminal record, the hundreds of thousands I just mentioned for sex crimes and assault and everything else. But it's a humanitarian crisis. These children are being exploited from these foreign countries, and they're being used two and three times as pawns by coyotes, by drug smugglers, because they know the laws and the loopholes that if you come with a kid, it changes the calculus, and that means when you come across the border, you are given different treatment than if you come across as a single adult male. And there was a reduction in adult males coming across in the first part of President Trump's administration, and that's a win. The problem is now two things have happened. They're coming from different areas. So now, under the Bush administration, the Obama administration, for example, they came from Mexico. But we have a deal with Mexico where we can send everyone back to Mexico almost immediately. There is no real, there is no time lapse for that. Now the influx is coming from the triangle below, the Guatemalas, the Honduras, El Salvador. And when they come this way, we can't just ship them back. Those are the ones we have to send out into the American communities until they have a court hearing, which, as you just pointed out, none of them come back to that court hearing. But also, we've seen a massive increase. It's not adult males that are coming. It's children and women and family units. That is extremely dangerous. And our laws incentivize that type of behavior, and we've got to close those loopholes so that it stops.
Well, like the president said yesterday, there's lawyers on the other side of the border that are basically handing these people a sheet of paper with exactly what to say. But also, you look at the facts, right? Only 10% of those that claim asylum actually qualify for it. So 90% that claim it don't, only 10% do. Of the people that are released, because there's a backlog of which there's right now an 800,000 backlog of cases, only 2% show up. So basically, we have an open border situation. You put, like the president said in the briefing yesterday, Hogan, you put one toe in the United States and you're protected by a set of laws that supersede the law that you came into the country illegally. So there's a tremendous incentive to just get over, because then you're going to be protected. The other thing
That's exactly what your point is precisely what the issue is. They're coming into this country illegally. They know that. They know the loopholes to get here illegally. And they know that once they come over here, they can claim asylum. Now, the asylum claim has gone up 1,700% in the last 8 years, because that's one of the biggest loopholes. They come here, they claim asylum, and they say, hey, I'm facing persecution from my home country. Now, instead of just crossing into Mexico and claiming asylum there, they're still making the trek and coming here. But as you just mentioned, there's not but 2% that actually show up for their court hearing, and of that 2%, 90% of those don't actually their case is thrown out. That's proven to be not true. They're lying about asylum. So it's still an infinitesimally small number that actually show up, and then even smaller that actually get through on asylum from a legitimate, you know, if you're claiming asylum in that manner. Legitimate asylum claims always get let into the country. But the fraudulent ones, as you just point out, that's the big nugget, because when they come in and they claim asylum, they're tagged and say, all right, here's something on your ankle, here's a piece of paper, come back to this court date, and as you just said, they never come back again. That's a massive influx into this country. And one thing I think your listeners should know, and I think we may have talked about this before, we worked out a deal now with the Mexican government where the Mexican government says, listen, we'll keep these asylees on our side of the border until you're ready to adjudicate them. That saves us money on beds. It saves us hundreds of billions of dollars a year on caring for these asylees. And it also weeds out the ones that are being fraudulent. But what you have now is a situation where the Mexican government is doing more to help and solve this situation than the Democrats are.
That's unbelievable. And, you know, we talked about that yesterday, and I keep bringing this point out, but the new president of Mexico, AMLO, offered 5,000 one-year work visas and asylum to 5,000 of the migrants. That's basically everybody that was still there. And after 3 weeks, only 195 people took advantage of it. So this whole asylum thing about, you know, fleeing persecution, look, they're coming. They, as the president said yesterday, they just want to come to the United States because they know there's a social welfare system that is going to take care of them, and that's just the bottom line, right?
Oh, absolutely. They know what's going on here. They know the score. They're being given those sheets of paper over in their countries of origin. A lot of the parents are being lied to over there, saying, "Hey, just give us your kid, give us money, we'll get the kid into the United States." I mean, they are exploiting children at every turn. If Democrats didn't care at all about national security, let's just pretend for a second. I think some of them do care, but let's just pretend wholesale no Democrat cared about national security. You know they all profess to care about humanitarian crisis all over the country. Well, we have one here in our country at our southern border. They say it's important to them all over the world, all over this country. Well, we have one at the southern border. At the very least, that should bring Democrats to the table to have this conversation and recognize the fact that we included so many extras into this piece of legislation based on things they wanted. And now it's squarely in their court. Come forward. Let's have this conversation, and we can get it done.
Hogan, we're out of time. I want to thank Hogan Gidley for being with us. He's the Deputy Press Secretary, spokesperson for the President of the United States, President Donald J. Trump. Hogan, we look forward to the President's address today and having you back soon. Thanks for your being with us today and sharing that with their own.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. The next step for the government shutdown is impossible to predict. Republican lawmaker advising President Donald Trump says he's encouraging the president to reopen the government for several weeks to continue negotiating with Democrats over funding for a U.S.-Mexico border. Senator Graham says that should be considered before the more drastic step of declaring a national emergency. Parts of central Illinois have registered record snowfalls after a winter storm struck and then lingered for much of the weekend. Springfield's State Journal Register reports that the state capitol broke a 55-year record for daily snowfall on Saturday. Officials say the man who shot and killed a California police officer left a letter on the bed in the home where he lived, claiming police bombarded him with ultrasonic waves. Police in the college town of Davis near Sacramento made public the letter that was written by Kevin Douglas Limbaugh. This is SRN News.
Pat Boone here again, and I assure you, I have never before endorsed a pain relief product. Not until now. Not until Relief Factor came along as a 100% drug-free solution for people struggling with ordinary pain. Quite simply, Relief Factor was designed by doctors to help relieve those occasional aches and pains due to aging, exercise, and everyday living. Let me ask you, are aches and pains keeping you from sleeping through the night? Or keeping you from taking those nice long walks or playing golf or tennis? You can't really call it living if you can't get around comfortably. The 3-week quick start from Relief Factor may be all you need to lower or even eliminate these pains. A whole lot of people have already gone to ReliefFactor.com, and here's something you need to know. The majority of people who order the 3-week quick start, now only $19.95, go on to order more. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to ReliefFactor.com.
Do you know who was voted the Bold City's best plumber? Roland Reisch Plumbing. Here's why. Roland Reisch Plumbing promises great work on time and does it. The good news spreads fast. For all plumbing issues, large or small, you want the Bold City's best. Click Plumber in Jacks.com. Your friends and neighbors have used them. And that's why they went to Jacksonville.com to vote Roland Reisch Plumbing Jacksonville's top plumber. 24/7, Roland Reisch Plumbing is standing by, whether it's routine work or a middle-of-the-night emergency. Just call 904-260-7059. If you have a leak, can't wait a week, please call Roland Reisch Plumbing at 904-260-7059. Roland Reisch Plumbing is proud to have been voted Bold City's best plumber. They intend to stay number one. Call 904-260-7059. Call 904-260-7059.
Are you afraid of the IRS because you have unfiled or unpaid taxes? Most don't realize that having unfiled federal taxes is a misdemeanor punishable by up to 1 year in jail for each unfiled return. With the IRS, it's never a question of if they'll come, but when. We are J. David Tax Law, a local firm right here in Jacksonville. Your first step to IRS protection is our no-cost consultation. We take the time to go through your specific tax problem step by step. At J. David Tax Law, only highly experienced tax attorneys will represent you. Our fee payment plans are affordable for everyone. Call today for a no-cost consultation at 904-606-0009. That's 904-606-0009. Or find us on the web at jdavidtaxlaw.com. Peace of mind is only a click or phone call away.
Joining us now is Susan Stimson. Susan is in Virginia. She's in Stafford County. And Susan ran for lieutenant governor in 2013 as a Republican, was defeated there at the convention, which E.W. Jackson won, which I never saw coming, by the way. Susan also ran for House of Delegates member in a primary against then-Speaker Bill Howell. I believe that was in 2015, right here in Virginia. And she's joining us today. Hey, Susan, welcome.
Hey, good morning, John. I was getting a little worried there. I've been on hold, so I'm glad that I got through.
Hey, just let me give a full disclaimer. Susan ran for office 2 times. The John Fredericks Radio Network was hostile to both of her candidacies, Lieutenant Governor and when she challenged Bill Howe for House of Delegates. But that was then. Susan, and this is now, so we've turned the page. Also, Susan, we know you've been through some personal challenges. And so my big question to you is, are you feeling better and are things going well for you personally? Then we can get into the politics.
John, thank you so much for asking. I really appreciate it. Yes, things are going great, and there's nothing like the issue of life to encourage me to just use my voice and be involved. And right now in Virginia, the liberals are pushing the Equal Rights Amendment, which is really a way to enshrine abortion dollars, and I'm just speaking out on that because, unfortunately, once again, we have Republicans that are traitors, like Senator Jill Vogel, who is leading the fight with the liberal wing to rush this through. She has a committee meeting today that she's called on the very first day of session to rush this through. So thank you for having me.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the Equal Rights Amendment in Virginia, and I know there's a lot of people backing this. I guess my question is, the last time I remember the Equal Rights Amendment like being a battle, I was 17 or 18, and it was like 1974, and Phyllis Schlafly was leading the effort against it. I think I was in college playing baseball, wondering what the deal was, and people would go around with ERA buttons on. I was in New Jersey at the time. I don't really remember what New Jersey did, but that was like, that was in the 70s, Susan. That was 50 years ago. 50 years ago. All of a sudden, like 1975, it's just coming up on 2020. That's 40 years. Well, let's see. That's 45 years removed. Why all of a sudden now is this like back in play?
I think that you can look at what happened with President Trump and the Republicans and the battle for the Supreme Court and what they did to Justice Kavanaugh. It's about enshrining abortion into the Constitution and the millions of dollars that flow to it. Because you're right, the ERA, it expired in 1982. They did not reach the three quarters of states to ratify it that they needed, and it expired. So it was DOA, but they have resurrected it. And I think you need to look no further than the Supreme Court to know that that's what's really going on here. It's for the right to abortion, and it's for the millions of dollars that flow to that industry.
So how does ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment in Virginia, which even if it is ratified, there's now a constitutional legal argument that those states that ratified it before would have to re-ratify it. And you need what? You need two-thirds of the states. I just don't see it as a realistic proposition right now. But when you say that it will increase abortions, how exactly would that work? Like, walk us through why you make that assertion, Susan.
Well, I'm not an attorney, but Ken Cuccinelli was and is an amazing attorney. He served as Virginia's former attorney general, and he sent a letter on January the 6th to all the delegates and the senators that said, passing the Equal Rights Amendment will forcibly expand access to state-funded abortion, including court-ordered public funding of abortion, because what it will do is show the judges, which they, the federal and state judges in states all around the United States that have passed the ERA, they view this as legislative intent that the legislators want the courts to look at abortion as they would any other medical procedure. Therefore, you can't deny tax dollars to pay for abortions.
Okay, so what you're saying is the passing the Equal Rights Amendment in Virginia, or I guess passing it nationally, would then be a veil in order to not deny abortion funding through taxpayer-funded subsidies. Is that basically what the argument is?
Abortion is to be viewed as any other medical procedure. And so this enshrines it in the Constitution. Right now, the right to an abortion is just really based on a judicial opinion that doesn't have legislative intent behind it. And as you saw in the Supreme Court battle, that's really what the liberal left wing of America is concerned about, is enshrining abortion. So it also threatens churches and their tax-exempt status as well, because the ERA states you shall not discriminate based on sex. So one example would be the Catholic Church. They have an all-male priesthood or clergy, and possibly under the Equal Rights Amendment, churches will not be able to have that type of doctrine. They're going to have to change their doctrine.
Well, that's a real issue. I'm a Catholic. That certainly is an issue because they might lose their tax-exempt status, and I've heard that from my clergy saying that that is a real possibility. So, obviously, I think that's one of the issues. And you know what? I've got a message from America First Posse's. You know, we can't wait any longer to secure the borders. That's what the president said. Over the past 3 months, 60,000 migrants showed up at our border every month. That's 720,000 a year, same as the entire city of Seattle. Now, even worse, this human wave carries dangerous criminals. Illegal aliens are charged with killing 12 Americans just last year. That's one a month. Good people like police officer Singh, who was shot and killed doing a routine traffic stop, and 16-year-old Madison Wells, stabbed to death by her ex-boyfriend, who was here illegally. And what about Logan and Jessica Wilson? Their three young children are now permanently separated from their parents after an illegal alien charged with drunk driving and manslaughter crashed into them. This is sad and it's sick. Enough already. Call Congress, tell them you heard the president last night and you want them to build the wall now. You can call now. They answer the phone, 202-224-3121. Tell me you've had enough. 202-224-3121. Call them now. For more information, go to AmericaFirstPolicies.org. This message is paid for and authorized by America First Policies Incorporated. Joining us now, Senior Policy Advisor for America First Policies. He's also was with the Department of Labor. He was with the Trump campaign. He was with the transition team. He's been all over the place. And he's now an accomplished writer and author. Read him on the Daily Caller. Read him in the Hill. Read him all over the place. And he's with us now, Curtis Ellis. And this is a special day for Curtis. Today is Curtis's birthday. So let's start by saying, Curtis Ellis, happy birthday.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be alive.
I know. Curtis,
it's great to be alive and to be on John Frederick's show.
I know, right? The Godzilla of truth. Now, we're not going to tell you how old Curtis is, but he could retire today and collect Social Security. Now, Curtis, but I'm not going to tell your age.
What?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say how old you are, because age is a state of mind, my friend.
That's right.
Just look at Trump. 72 years old and still going strong. Curtis, a great piece in the Daily Caller yesterday. So right before you came on, Philip Rucker of the Washington Post comes in, and he's interviewing Corey Lewandowski upstairs. So I looked up his Twitter feed, and he blasted the president's speech to smithereens. He said it was dull, and he didn't want to do it. And then he leaked the off-the-record meeting at the luncheon and said the president even didn't want to do the speech. And what did you think of the whole thing?
The speech was very good. I thought he laid out the case very clearly. It's about crime. It's about humanitarian crisis. These people, no one's doing any favors let's put it this way. We're not doing these people from Central America any favors by having an open border, by not enforcing our laws, because then they become victims of the whole, well, I don't have to tell your audience what the problem is. They get the problem. I thought he laid out the problem very clearly, very succinctly. In 11 minutes, and then that freak show came on. I can't believe what Nancy and Chuck looked like. I mean, that was the most unflattering portrait I have ever seen. It looked like American Gothic, you know, the farmer family with the wife and the guy with the pitchfork and standing in front of the house. I mean, it was, like, really weird. I thought the president did a great job. And, of course, the legacy media is never going to say anything nice about this guy. So it does not surprise me that Philip Rucker thought it was boring. If it wasn't boring, you would have said, oh, my gosh, he was dramatic, overly dramatic. He was ranting and raving. So, you know, whatever.
All right. So, look, Curtis Ellis, I'm not going to focus on what Philip Rucker said. He's a hopeless legacy media, fake news, liberal. Let's get to what really matters here. The president laid his case out yesterday. Morgan Griffin said something I thought was very interesting, and then I want to get to your column. And what he said is, here's the deal. Here's why the Democrats don't want to negotiate, because they're afraid the president will say yes. And I thought that was brilliantly done. So I want to go over two things. DACA. 1 year ago, Schumer shut the government down over DACA and screamed about the kids, the kids, the kids. Why not just go to the president and say, look, I'll give you your $5.7 billion. Let's just get a deal on DACA because it's about the kids, the kids, and the kids, which he said 12 months ago. Now, all of a sudden, those kids don't matter. So DACA's off the table. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I think I think your congressman there is onto something. The Democrats cannot make a deal with this president because then you'll have people like Congresswoman Occasional Cortex go crazy. It's like, how dare you deal with this war criminal or with this Nazi, as Hank Johnson called him, or this mother bleeper, as another one of the great esteemed members of the House of Representatives is calling the president. So how this is a question that is serious. If you have members of your conference calling this guy a war criminal, calling him the Antichrist, calling him a racist, I mean, Occasional Cortex on 60 Minutes said he's a racist. There's no doubt he's a racist. Well, if somebody's a racist, how can you deal with them? If they're a war criminal, how do you deal with them? If they're if they're Hitler, how can you negotiate with Hitler? You don't. So they can't. They can't negotiate with him. Nancy can't negotiate with him. She's a puppet. Her strings are being pulled by this crazy Palestinian American, by this photogenic congresswoman who was elected by 16,000 votes from Queens, from New York City. That's who's running the conference. And they're saying you can't negotiate with the horrible creature in the White House. So Nancy can't negotiate. Period. Done. She should have stayed in Hawaii, and she should stay in Hawaii for the next 2 years because she can't do anything.
She can't do anything because she's beholden to her super left wing base that really doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Look, let's get to your column in the Daily Caller, which I thought was outstanding yesterday. We're with Curtis Ellis, Senior Policy Advisor, America First Policies. I want you to recount, Curtis, for our audience, in the Daily Caller column, you talked about the wasteful spending the Democrats did on the high-tech security apparatus that basically was a no-bid contract given to major Democratic donors. Walk us through that.
Yeah. So you heard last night Nancy Pelosi says she's willing to invest in new technology and innovation to secure the border, right? She again puts her faith in there's an app for that, right? She'll, you know, what she's going to do is she wants to give every migrant that shows up or as soon as they get on a caravan in Honduras, she's going to give them an Android phone, which is great because then Facebook and the apps built into the Android phone track where they're going. So we'll know exactly where these people are at all times, and somehow that's magically going to stop them. And then we're going to put in like a bug zapper on the border or something that will or have a Star Wars force field at the border, and that will repel them, and they won't be able to come into our country. Apparently that's her thinking, right? Well, guess what, Nancy?
Right.
We tried that once. When you were Speaker, as a matter of fact, when you were Speaker of the House in 2007 through 2011, the United States of America spent $1 billion with Boeing to create the Secure Border Initiative that used sensors and radars and cameras and radios, and there were going to be these tall towers and everything that we could see the people where they were, and then you would immediately dispatch border agents to get there and shut them down, and radar would identify where they were. And guess what? It didn't work. It did not work. And the esteemed member of Congress, Dave Obie, from Wisconsin, was chairman of the House Appropriations
right.
Committee. He was a Democrat, Nancy.
Right.
You appointed him to that job as Appropriations Chairman. He started examining this contract, and he saw that it was a huge boondoggle and did not work. So, Nancy, your memory must be failing or something, because this whole nonsense about using technology to secure the border, and as a matter of fact, it does not work. So maybe when she thinks walls don't work, and as a matter of fact, the Government Accountability Office said, if the money were spent on building a wall, the wall would have covered 73 miles. Instead, we'd spent $1 billion to try to have high-tech security innovation for 28 miles. So 28 miles versus 73 miles of a real wall. Government Accountability Office said that's the way it works. So I think Nancy, when she says walls don't work, she's probably thinking of the blue wall that was supposed to protect Hillary Clinton. But, you know, we know that wall didn't work. But, Nancy, that was a virtual wall. And what you're talking about building is a virtual wall. And we know virtual walls don't work. We know it in the Great Lakes. We know it in the 2016 election. And we know it from your previous experience as Speaker of the House when we tried to build one of these high-tech virtual walls. Did not work. And you don't hear... And then they said they went through this whole spiel about, oh, it's wasteful, it's ineffective, and it's wasteful. Well, we know that walls are effective, right? That's why everybody has one around their house, like President Obama. That's why we had a wall around the consulate in Benghazi, and it did work until people hit it with RPGs and stormed the thing. And we have walls around our embassies. We have walls all over the place that work all the time. But they say it's wasteful, right? Well, Pelosi did not ask Boeing to give the $1 billion back. By the way, Boeing got that contract for $1 billion to build the wall that didn't work. And if you look on Open Secrets, you'll see that Boeing's employees give a whole lot of money to the Democratic Party. I don't know if that's a coincidence or what. Maybe that's she didn't ask for the money back when they decided the wall didn't work and canceled the whole program. Jerry Nadler didn't ask for any money back after he voted for the Iran deal and we sent $1 billion in cash to Iran. So this is probably the first time in human history that the Democratic Party cares about wasting taxpayers' money. So their claims about it's wasteful really don't cut it. They don't stand up to logic and history. And Then the other reason, and they didn't go into this last night so much, but you've heard the talking point this week, is wall. I mean, come on. We can do so much better than a wall. I mean, walls are so old. I mean, it's just like such an old idea. Well, you know, all I can say is here, let's call up Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, that is like so ageist to be criticizing something because it's old. I mean, like, that's like really not right. I mean, come on. Chuck Schumer's old, and he works, right? I wish he didn't, but he works. So anyway, I mean, that's just that's really foolish. Gravity's old, and it works.
It's a foolish argument. It's like the president said in the briefing the other day. He said, the wheel is pretty old also, and that still works. So, you know,
really?
This whole thing, the technology is old. I mean, it's the wheel still works. I'm going to bring a caller in, Curtis, that I'm sure is not going to agree with us. Mike from Oakland. Mike's been holding on the line of go ahead, Mike. You're on the air with John and Curtis.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Sorry, I lost my voice a little bit, John. You know, I live out here on the left coast now, and was able to see my Clemson Tigers whip up on Alabama Monday night, and I kind of lost my voice, so apologize for that.
Don't blame you. A great win.
We had a great time, great seeing a bunch of old classmates and whatnot too. So yeah, you're right. I guess I'm struggling a little bit with trying to get my head wrapped around some of the things that the president said. I didn't watch the speech, but I read the transcript this morning. And I just find it, I find what he's saying to be, I just think he's drumming up, a situation or a reality that's not real. And I think he's trying to make
well, it is real, Mike. All the data is there. All the data is there, Mike. Look,
all the
data is real. Let me just ask you this, because I'm not going to argue the data because I've seen it all and it's all real, and the Democrats don't want to acknowledge it. Last year, Chuck Schumer shut the government down. Your hero shut it down over funding over DACA, over the kids. He wanted to help the kids.
Chuck Schumer's not wanted my hero, to give John. Them a, don't give put them a, words in my mouth. Chuck's not my
okay.
hero.
So I'm not Chuck, a Democrat. Chuck, you know Chuck that. Schumer
so
shut the
government.
He shut the government down.
Please.
He shut the government down over DACA. All right. Why doesn't he just negotiate DACA in now, give the president $5 million? Who cares? It's a drop in a bucket, and he can get DACA. President will say probably okay, and everybody wins. I mean, is it about the kids or isn't it?
I'll tell you why. Because the president said on many, numerous occasions that he was going to get Mexico to pay for this useless piece of junk wall that we're going to build along the entire border. You guys are using these analogies about people building walls around their homes. Well, heck yeah. I mean, that's something you're going to build around a very small structure. You know what? How many miles of,
all right,
border we have with Mexico?
All right. Can I jump in here? He never said we're going to get Mexico to pay for it ahead of time. And if you put a 10% or a 5% tax on all the money the Mexicans in this country send back home to Oaxaca and their village back in Veracruz, that would pay for the wall. And he actually addressed it in the speech last night when he said that the indirectly the new deal we have with Mexico will pay for it. But he never said that they would pay for it ahead of time, okay? So let's be very clear. You're very precise in the language, and I respect that, and that's great.
Okay, so we're going to have them make payments, or how's that going to work? How are we going to tax money going back to individuals?
All right, okay. So my cleaning lady, or your, you know, or the people who are the leaf blowers that wander the streets of Southern California, Palos Verdes Estates, and Beverly Hills, every week or every month, they go to Western Union and wire money back to Emiliano Zapata village in Mexico. And when this is all electronically tracked, because that's how the money transfers are made these days, Western Union knows that when the recipient of this money is located somewhere south of the border, they know that automatically, and immediately a percentage, 1%, 2%, 5%, is taken out. Right?
Okay. That's an interesting plan. I've not heard the president mention that. What I have heard him mention is the tariffs that we're going to apply to Mexican products coming in. And guess who pays those tariffs, guys? Not Mexico. We pay them. We pay the tariffs. That's what we're doing for China right now. We're paying the tariffs.
No, that's not a fact. That's an opinion. You're entitled to your opinion. That's one way of looking at it. But
that's not an opinion. That's not an opinion.
Yes, it is.
I'm paying tariffs right now for products that I buy from China. They don't pay.
I've written about this. I've studied this for a long time. In fact, the Chinese manufacturers have been knocking down their prices to make up for those tariffs. They've been the technical term for this is they've been eating it so that they can keep the business.
How much product do you buy from China? Just out of curiosity. I buy millions.
Most every American, when you go into a store, most everything's made in China. So you don't even know. You don't even know how much you're buying from China. When you buy an Apple phone, you're buying something that was assembled in China. When you buy a toaster,
all right, guys, great debate.
It's made in China.
Great debate, but we're out of time. I got to go. Top of the hour news. Love you both. Mike, congratulations on your big Clemson win. They left no doubt. Curtis Ellis, always a pleasure to have you on. Read Curtis's column in the Daily Call.